Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Mac, and you are listening to Mac's Musings. My guest tonight is Giorgio Serafini, and I'm going to be calling him, and hopefully we'll be talking to him in not too long, within a minute, hopefully. There we go.
Hello.
Hello, this is Mac. Can
you
hear me okay?
Hi, Mac. How are you doing? I can hear you okay.
I'm okay. How are you, Giorgio? Oh, good.
Very well,
yeah,
thank you.
I always ask. Oh, good, good. I always ask because every once in a while we don't get on the air, and so that's one way to make sure is if we both hear each other. So one of my first questions that I like to ask is when did you realize that you wanted to go into filmmaking as a career?
Ooh, that's interesting. Well, you know, I was born and raised in a family where it was absolutely impossible to break in the film industry. It was always a dream of mine, but it looked like it would not happen. And then when I was in my 20s, in my early 20s, I wrote a script, and that script was accepted by a producer who got, you know, in Europe, you also have film funds from different nations. And he got a fund for that film, and we did it. So that was really the first step. But when I fully realized I wanted to do films, was probably after my father took me to watch a rerun of The Bridge on the River Kwai. So that was, I was probably 12 or 11, and I fell in love with movie making at that moment.
Yeah, that was a big production. That would be a good one to look at when you're interested in a filmmaking career.
And, you know, it's funny because I've always been, and I still am, a big fan of David Lean. I really think that he was a fantastic director. And what I always liked about him is the fact that even when he did these huge productions like, you know, Lawrence of Arabia or Dr. Zhivago, he always brought the audience by following a single character, which was quite unique at that time. So you always are in these productions with tons of characters, with tons of extras, huge scenes, but you really felt for the lead characters. And that's something that always stuck with me.
Yes, yes, I know what you're talking about, because I feel the same way. Something else that I wanted to ask you. Oh, I'm sorry. Sometimes there's an overlap, and I can't tell if people are still talking. You were going to say something else?
No. I mean, I can go for hours about David Lean, but I think that's my major take.
We only have 1 hour. Well, actually, it's less than an hour now. But you can still talk for a few minutes about him if you want to.
Well, I can say that, thank you. My favorite film, probably of all time, is a film of his, which is Brief Encounter. And it's a film that he did in 1946 before he moved to Hollywood. And Brief Encounter is a really interesting film because when I first started doing movies, I was taught that it's a bad idea to do too much voiceover or too many flashbacks. And Brief Encounter, that's all it is. It's all voiceovers and flashbacks, but the voiceovers were written by Noel Coward. So it's a fantastic little piece, probably a 3 or 4 characters piece. And it's so moving even today that, that's actually the first film that I show my wife when I met her, and it's kind of ironic because it's a film about a woman who is cheating on her husband. I don't know if it was the perfect first movie, but it is such a great movie.
That is kind of funny.
It is funny.
It kind of makes me wonder what she was thinking as she was watching it with you.
Yeah, you know, but I have to say, and that was, you know, of course, it's a British film back in the 40s, but, you know, the big moment of sin in the whole film, it's a single kiss. So it's not like it was not like 9.5 weeks. It was just
right.
A very, very intimate, beautiful, beautiful film.
Well, that's good that you introduced her to something like that and not some of the stuff that you could have introduced her to. Something else that I wanted to go over before we even got to some of your films. Now, you've worked on films in many different countries, in Belgium, Italy, the U.S., and other countries. And so if you would, discuss some of the differences in the filmmaking process when you go from country to country.
Sure. I mean, the filmmaking process in Europe is more or less the same in every single country. Very little changes. And I'm lucky because I know all three languages pretty well. I was born in Belgium from an Italian family. So I know obviously French, Italian, and English. Some English. I try my best. And I would say, you know, I would say that it's a little bit more, in the States, it's definitely much more professional. Everyone has a very specific task, everyone in the crew. And sometimes it is difficult to be as creative as you can be in Europe. So, everything has to be planned, which is always a good idea, but everything has to be planned in advance when you work in the States. Everyone wants to know exactly what they're doing before even they start moving a piece of equipment. Italy, and I don't want that to sound like they are more sloppy, because they are not, but you have a little bit more of a margin to create on the spot, which is very, very pleasant. I really like that. Now, there are a lot of things that I don't like about working in Italy, but I do prefer at the end of the day to work in the States. But I'm always excited to go back and to do a project there. I actually did my very last film. It was my first feature movie in Italian since my very first film. So I only did two feature movies in the Italian language. All the rest that I did in Italian were TV series. It was a wonderful experience, really a wonderful experience. And the film is one of the ones that I'm the most proud of.
And which one is that? It's probably on my list.
It's called Men and Other Inconveniences. I think that on IMDb it's still with the old title, which was Sex and Other Inconveniences. But then the film turned out to be a little bit more mild than I first imagined it when I wrote it, because I wrote that film. And it's a wonderful, heartfelt comedy. So I'm really, really proud of that one.
Aww.
It's still in post-production, though.
Ah, got it. Okay. Now, one of the ones that I wanted to ask you about was, it's like the first credit you have on IMDb, the Nickelodeon type. It's a short. You were the producer, writer, director. And so tell us about that one.
Well, that was, so I was at the end of my, of college. I did political science. I studied political science in Brussels. And I wanted so much to try to do a film, and I had very little idea of what I was doing. So I wrote this, I think it's around 15 or 16 minutes film, which was very much an homage to Repulsion, which was, I think Repulsion was the second film that Roman Polanski directed. And it's a fantastic film. I know I should not even mention Roman Polanski, but, you know, there is a difference between the person and the director.
Exactly.
I'm fully aware of that. But so it was kind of an homage to that. And I did that film. I basically produced it with money that I was making being a receptionist in a hotel. And so I did that little film, and once I shot it, I had no idea how to edit it. And I discovered that the director of my thesis was also a filmmaker, and he had, at that time, because we're talking about 1986, he had his own flatbed to edit. So he gave me the keys of his apartment, and I would go every night there to edit. And I did this little film, and I screened it a couple of times, and then I sent it to festivals. And, you know, at that time, you had to send a real print to the festival. You cannot just send it on a link on an email. And it was selected to quite a few festivals. So that really gave me the spark. The most important thing about that film is that it really gave me the spark to say, well, maybe you know how to do it. You know, there are people that react well to that. So let's continue. And that's how I came up with writing my first feature film.
Interesting little story. Mm-hmm. You were going to say something else?
No, that's basically it.
Oh, okay. In 1992, I just like pick some stuff at random. In 1992, you did Blue Note. You acted in that, and you were, I'm sorry?
No, that's correct, yes.
And you were, wrote it and directed it. So tell us about that one, because I read about it on IMDb, and it sounds interesting.
Well, that one, first of all, I hardly acted in it. I was playing a homeless guy in a very, very small bit. So forget about my acting skill, because honestly, I'm one of those directors that cannot act. And as much as I like to do a little thing once in a while, that's actually, it's funny because most of the time you will think that an actor would be a better director for other actors. Well, which is probably true, but I take this in reverse, is that because I don't know how to act, I have the highest esteem for people who know how they do it. When they do it well. So it's always a pleasure to see that something on the page, no matter if I wrote it or not, but something on the, what they can bring to something on the page, you know, and that's, and it goes back to the difference that you said about Italy and Europe and the States, is that when you're in Europe, you have more opportunities to have the actor open with all his, with whatever he wants to bring into the film. And so you have this really strong collaboration between me and the actors that I really enjoy. I mean, of course, there are constraints of time and of scheduling, but it's right. such a pleasure to build a film with the actors, or at least to build a character. And what I always say to an actor when I first start, I say, listen, my role is to create the tracks, like a railroad tracks. Inside of those tracks, you're as free as you want to create the character. If I notice that you go outside of the tracks, then I come to you and I say, well, we'll do that in another movie, but not on this one. And that's my whole philosophy about directing. But to go back to Brunate, well, Brunate was that film I was mentioning before, that it was the first film that I directed. And I wrote the script, I think, 4 or 5 years earlier. And it was an interesting story because of my political science background. You know, at that time it was the end of the Russian, of the Soviet, of the Soviet countries, and so I came up with a totally fictional story about how four people delayed of one day the building of the Berlin Wall. And we shot the film, we shot the first week of the film in Berlin, and then the rest of it, we shot it in Italy. And the funny part, I think, about that film is that when there is the big reveal and one of the characters tells the story about how they succeeded to delay the building of the wall for one day in order to escape, of course, instead of going into flashbacks, I did the flashbacks with real footage of building the wall. So it was really a lot of people after the screenings came to me and they were like, is this a real story? Because it looks so real. And of course it wasn't. I totally made it up. So that was interesting. And, you know, to go back to political science, I think it was the perfect start for me, because I've always been fascinated with history and research. And I did a lot of historical pieces, of period pieces. And it's a political science really brings you, really teaches you how to do research. So it's something that I still think today that it was a good segue to go into filmmaking.
Wow, that's all very interesting.
Thank you.
In 1996, you did, another, you know, and I'm saying it this way because of what you said about your acting, a quote-unquote acting role, and you were also director in The Garbage Man. So tell us about The Garbage Man.
Oh, The Garbage Man. Okay, The Garbage Man is, let's be honest, I'm not really proud about that film, but it was a very silly comedy. It was a one-joke movie. But you know what? It was my first American film. I arrived in the States mid of 1994, and here I am, early 96, where it was just a strike of luck. Some producer who never produced before wanted to do this script that he wrote. And of course I said yes. And at the end of the day, Mac, I have to be honest, you know, I've done some films that are okay and some films that are not okay, but I always do them with a lot of enthusiasm. Because even today, and you know, as you can see on IMDb, I was lucky to do quite a few films. Even today, I still consider myself a film lover who is lucky enough to do films. So I'm always. And by the way, to go back to David Lean, in his autobiography, the first line is, please don't tell the producers I would have done it for free. And that's a little bit like I feel.
Yeah, I remember that.
So yeah, the garbage man was fun. It was very stressful. It was not fun to do. It was very stressful. It was my first American film. I acted, but for like a really little bit. I don't think the film went anywhere, by the way. I mean, it was sold in a few territories, but didn't have a big following. So that's okay. It's all part of the process.
Yeah, well, that is true, the process. But here's the nice thing about it. A lot of times the way things are with the DVDs and the streaming and everything, sometimes these older movies get more press, if you will, when they're older than they did when they were first run, because a lot of people didn't know about them. Well, because back in the 90s, it was harder to get to see movies if you didn't go to the theater to see them.
Absolutely. No, that's absolutely true. I haven't watched that film probably since 97, so I will not know if it has the possibility to become some kind of a cult. You never know. What I did know is that in that film, I worked with an actor whose name was Joe Estevez, and he's Martin Sheen's brother. And recently, I mean, we'll go to that later, but recently I hired him again for Senior Moment. And so on set, because he was doing a smaller role in Senior Moment, and I went to him and I said, "Hi, I'm George, I'm the director." And Joe was very, very pleased that I would come to him and talk to him. And I said, "But Joe, don't you remember me?" And he goes like, "Oh my." and then I told him, so we worked together in The Garbage Man. And he said, "Oh, I have the best memories of that, of shooting that film." And I went like, "Really?" So that's funny.
Oh, that's a nice little story. That's very cute.
Yeah, it is nice. He's a really good actor, very solid. I hope to work with him again.
Oh, good. I hope you get to work with him too. somewhere around 2004, I think, 2004 to 2006, you did a TV series, and you quote-unquote acted in an episode. You directed 39 out of the 42 episodes of Orgoglio.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I actually directed Orgoglio, which means pride in Italian. So we were always joking mm-hmm. on set that it was Pride Without Prejudice. But the story mm-hmm. had nothing to do with Jane Austen. That was a fantastic adventure. It was produced by an old producer that passed since then. His name was Goffredo Lombardo. And Goffredo Lombardo produced probably the biggest masterpieces in Italian film history, including, I mean, there is a very famous film called The Leopard with Burt Lancaster, and he produced that one, and he produced a lot of classics. And then his production company went into doing only TV. And something really magical happened is that I met Goffredo for another project, and we fell in love. I mean, you know, as filmmakers, we really connected. And he said, "Listen, I cannot take you for this project," but I remember walking out of the room where he said, But don't worry, I have a much bigger one, and I want you to be the director. And, you know, you hear producers saying that all the time, and I'm going like, yeah, sure. And you know what? 2 months later, he called me, and I was in L.A. He called me and said, well, come back here because we're going to start this new project. And that was Orgoglio. I actually directed every single episode of Orgoglio, so I don't know why IMDb is keeping me out of three, but I directed every single one. But because it was such a long, shoot, it was divided with two crews. And one, and you know, I cannot say that it was first and second unit. They were really two units, but one of them, mine, was doing, I was staying for a really long time in the main castle where the main plot was taking place. And then the other unit would change locations every day. So at the end of the day, and this is without taking anything out of the qualities of the other unit, but at the end of the day, out of a 50-minute episode, I would direct probably 40 minutes of that episode and the other unit 10, just because they moved around so much. It was a period piece set in 1912. It was absolutely gorgeous. I mean, we had the perfect crew, the perfect director of photography. I mean, that is one of the best memories of my professional life.
Oh, well, I'm glad I picked that one then.
And by the way, Orgoglio, I'm sorry, just to let you know, Orgoglio was like a huge success in Italy. I mean, it was, you know, one of those shows where the whole country will stop to watch the episode. The last episode of the first season was watched by 28 million people. Now you have to think that Italy has only 60 million people. So it was like huge. And that's why after Orgoglio, I was called constantly to do one show after another. And that's why I have, like, in my filmography, you can see there are probably 7 or 8 years where I did one Italian TV show after another. And then I decided to stop.
Yes, I do see that you have quite a few in there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, once you do something really well, people want to hire you. That's one nice thing about it. You get work and you get money.
Yeah. No, it's true. And, you know, and yes, it was very well paid. So I cannot complain about that. But the problem that I had is that, which is a very lucky problem to have, but with the last show that I did in Italy, which was another period piece called The Falcon and the Dove, and The Falcon and the Dove was, at that time, the most expensive TV series done in Italy. So I realized that I reached the top, that really my goal was never to do Italian films or to live in Italy. At that time, I was already living in the States. And so I said to my wife, you know, I'm going to take a hiatus from Italy and I'm going to stay here a little bit longer. And 5 days after I landed back in L.A., a producer called me to do the Wesley Snipes film. And that started a totally new phase of my career.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm going to fast forward, and then if we have time, I'll go back to some of the older ones.
Okay.
But in the interest of time, I want to make sure that I cover some of the newer stuff. In 2018, you did The Executioners. You produced it, wrote it, directed it, and I believe you acted in that one too. So tell us about The Executioners. Mm-hmm.
The Executioners, I didn't act on that one. That's much better, by the way. I edited it. I edited the film. Yeah, that was a very low budget film. That, you know, how can I say this? I think that on paper, it was better than what really was at the end. So it's not on my top list, but I wanted to do a very classic, very violent, which usually I don't do that, but very violent home invasion kind of film. And so we had a very graphic and extremely long sequence with nudity in it. And of course, the distributor, maybe rightfully so, I don't know, but the distributor asked to cut it. So we were laughing and we were saying, okay, we're going to have the Disney version of it and the real film. But, you know, the problem is that when you do a film where the goal is to shock the audience, you cannot do the mild version. The mild version is, you know, it just doesn't work. And that's the problem that I have with that film. I think that I produced it because I brought some elements into it, but the main producer probably should have had the distributor reading the script, because we shot exactly how the script was written. And the distributor should have read the script before he said okay, because or maybe he should have said, no, I'm not distributing it, because it was obvious that it would have been a very tough and, you know, hard film to watch. And then we ended up with something that it's, you know, it's okay. But, and all this because, of course, the MPAA rating gave us NC-17, and the contract said that we could not go over R. I say, yeah, but the script was, it's not like it's not like there was a line in the script and I made it like a 16 minutes scene out of that line. The script was everything was planned out in the story, and there was a reason for it. So that's the problem with that film. But, you know, I did it, and I'm glad that I did it. I learned quite a lot by doing it. But good. On the other hand, and I don't want to say, I'm sorry, you go for it.
No, you go right ahead.
Okay, no, the thing that I want to say is that I did a series of lower budget films, and at this point, I decided to stop because, it's not like I'm not proud of them, or it's just that it's very, very difficult to do a low-budget film well done. Time and talent, you know, very often, unfortunately, are not there. And as a director or as a producer, it almost takes as long to do, a bigger project than to do the small films. So I did a few of them. I enjoyed doing it, but I stopped, and this COVID times gave me the opportunity to take a deep breath and to focus on other projects.
Yeah, that's one thing that it's given quite a few people, given people time to breathe.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And actually, it's kind of a bad pun to say that during COVID some people could breathe. I'm sorry for that.
No, I got exactly what you meant. In I think it was the same. No, it was the next year. You did The Tracker, producer, writer, director. Tell us about The Tracker.
So before The Tracker, I did three films with Dolph Lundgren. And and then I wrote this film basically for him. And an Italian production company asked me if I had something with Dolph Lundgren. I said, well, you know, I have a script that I wrote for him, but, you know, Dolph is a very, very professional kind of guy. It's not like you call him at home to say, hey, Dolph, do you want to do a film with me? It doesn't work that way. So so I said, well, if you want to make him an offer, make him an offer, and I will be glad to do another one with him. And so we did The Tracker. I liked the film. The reviews were not as complimentary as I thought they would be. But, you know, what can you do? Sometimes you hit and sometimes you miss. But it's not a film that I will say, oh, I didn't think the film came out well. The film came out exactly what I had in mind. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Apparently, this time, it didn't hit the mark. But, you know, it was distributed. The producer made his money back. So it was all good. And it was a real pleasure to work in the south of Italy, where I did another film later, in a city called Taranto, which is in Puglia, which is the heel of Italy. And it's just gorgeous down there. It's just, actually, I think Helen Mirren has a house down there. That's how beautiful. I mean, it's just a gorgeous part of the peninsula. That said, Italy, you know, you may like it or not, but because it's not easy to live there, but it's such a beautiful country. I mean, everywhere you turn, you have like a, you know, you don't need to build sets in Italy. You have them.
Italy is very, very beautiful.
Yeah, that is a fact.
Let me see. I did have another one here. Oh, I picked this one because, one, I like the name, and the other is I thought it was interesting that it was kind of like a children's story. You wrote and directed Pegasus, Pony with a Broken Wing. So tell us about that one.
So that one, the title is exactly the reason why I wanted to do it. Well, there are two reasons why I wanted to do it. I rewrote the script, but the original script was not mine. So the concept and the original script was not from me. I just thought it needed some rewrite, and with the producers we agreed. So that's why my name appears as one of the screenwriters. So that was one of those extremely low budget films, but they gave me two possibilities. One was that I really enjoy to direct my son in the film. So one of the leads is my son. And that was fun. It was fun for me. I don't know if it was fun for him, because when I work with family members, and my wife is an actress, I'm usually very tough, because I don't want the rest of the crew to think, oh, he hired his wife because she's his wife. And I'm going like, no, I hired my wife because I think she's perfect for that role. And so it's the same thing with my son. So I'm not the kindest person with my family members. It's the reverse than more people would think. But it was very pleasant. It was a very hard film to do because it had kids, it had animals, it had water. And we shot it in a record time. I mean, I think we shot it in 12 days.
Wow.
In the outskirts of Austin and Texas. And it was just, you know, a fairly pleasant experience. And the other thing that was really nice about that film is that it's really my only film for kids, I really wanted to do one, and I'll probably do another one if the opportunity comes. So I really like to work with kids. So it's a completely different process but it's very rewarding and very and a lot of fun. So.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that from other people. What's your son's name so I know to look for him when I watch it? Because I want to watch this movie now.
my son, his name as an actor is Johnny Sinclair, because his real name is Johnny Sinclair Serafini. So it is his real name, but we took out the last name for his acting career.
got it. Because I really do want to see this movie, because I like all kinds of movies, actually, but with things like this where it's not just a kids movie, it also has the element of sci-fi, if you will, like on the very low side of sci-fi.
Of course.
Yeah, because I've got a thing for Pegasus, so because
I like
the horse with wings. What can I say?
No, that's great. You know, there is a famous website for people that are, for families that are very Christian, and it's created by the Dove Foundation. And the Dove Foundation, rates films in terms of their Christian content. And this film was not done with the idea to do a Christian movie in any way possible. I mean, I'm not defending myself, but that was not the purpose. And the Dove Foundation gave it a really, really nice review, saying that even if it was centered on mythological elements, so not on the Bible or not on, you know, on Christian beliefs, it brought up, it was a good way to teach kids about those legends, and at the same time to brought up real values of family and, you know, the basic Christian values. So that was nice. I enjoyed that.
Wow. Yeah, that was very nice.
Yeah.
'Cause they're not always nice to some of these movies. So, yeah, it was very nice.
No, it's kind of funny. I'm sorry if I interrupted, but I said the irony
of
this is that it's kind of funny when you do a Christian movie without knowing that you're doing one. That's probably the irony in all this.
Yeah, somebody coming to you, especially if they come right out and say it, hey, you made a Christian movie, good job. Yeah, that wasn't my intention.
And once again, I'm not defending myself from it. It's fine. It's just that very often low-budget Christian movies, forget about the message, which, of course, is the important thing, but it's just the quality is not there. So that's my main problem with most of the Christian movies, low-budget Christian movies that have been made. I don't know why, but... Okay, I said it. Alpha the Country is going to be against me now.
Nah, because everybody's entitled to their opinion. I did want to talk about one that you mentioned earlier, of course, and that would be the senior moment, and this would be the time when you can go into more detail about it, like what's it about, some of the people that are in it, and you directed it. That I know, but I don't know what else you did in it, but you can talk about that as well. So talk about senior moment.
So senior moment is one of the best experience I had in my career. It happened all of a sudden. I was shopping a different project with the producer, Gina Goff, and then she received a call from William Shatner's office saying that Bill wants to do the movie, and I didn't know that she submitted another script to Bill Shatner. So all of a sudden, she had money to do the film, not all of it, but a good chunk already. She had the okay from Bill, and they were looking for a director. So during the lunch break, we had several meetings that day. She said, well, would you like to do this film? I said, well, I would say that sounds very exciting to do a film with Bill Shatner. And she told me it's a comedy. So I said, listen, Gina, I'll be honest with you. I really want to do this, but this will be, garbage men aside, but this will be really be my first comedy. So I warn you, you know, I have a tendency to be in the European dark side more than the shining comedy side. But you know what? I had such a blast that actually now I'm writing another comedy, and then I did the comedy in Italy. So it really changed me a lot to do this film. The film is about, it's difficult for me to say the synopsis, because the synopsis will be an older bachelor has this fantastic collectible car, which is a Porsche, and he risks to do a huge accident, killing people. I mean, no one gets killed, but the risk is there. People outside in a cafe. So it's a big mess. And the DA, and we shot the film in Palm Springs, the local DA has started a war against older people still getting their driving license. So he loses his driving license. He's losing his car, which was the object that kept him young. And he has 2 weeks to pass the test again and get his car back. And during these 2 weeks, he becomes a bus guy. You know, he has to take the bus. I mean, and of course, everything happens during these 2 weeks. So he finds love, and he has like this great friend of his, who is played by Christopher Lloyd, and it's a really fun, endearing, romantic comedy. I love that film. I really love it. It came out so well, and I had the support of a fantastic producer who went through hell in order to do it, but she did it, and the film is now just finished, and Endeavor took it for sales, which is, you know, one of the biggest companies here. So we are, we literally finished the film 3 weeks ago, the whole post-production process. So it's just brand new. And to work with, you know, with a great group of seasoned actors. I mean, we had, and by the way, not only seasoned, I mean, we had obviously Bill Shatner, Christopher Lloyd, Jean Smart, who is absolutely wonderful.
She is.
And she's a dear friend of mine. The story with Jean Smart, it's so unbelievable, because my wife and I met Jean Smart on a train. I mean, and that's how we became friends. Yeah, and my son and her daughter became friends on the train. And since then, we have been friends, and we work together. And she is, I mean, I always like her, but on this film, I mean, I really don't know who directed her so well. She was fantastic.
Oh, come on.
I'm just kidding.
I know.
And then we had also a group of fantastic actors, like Carlos Miranda, who is an actor who is in the TV series La Vida, Maya Stone. I mean, we had Katharina Barden, who was in 30 Rocks. I mean, fantastic group of people. Shooting was not easy, but very pleasant. Not easy just because we had a huge amount of different locations. But it was a beautiful experience. And, you know, to work with Christopher Lloyd for a director is the easiest thing on earth, because once you basically tell him what you want from the characters, he does everything by himself and he doesn't miss a beat. The other thing that was fantastic about him is that we never thought we would have such a name for the character. So the character didn't have that many lines. He was in a lot of scenes, but didn't have that many lines. And Chris, I was watching Christopher doing his fantastic thing where he would steal the scene without saying a word, but at the same time, he was not really stealing it, because it's not like he was taking over or, you know, reducing the space that the other actors had. He was just finding his footing into the scene so brilliantly that it was such a pleasure to watch. I mean, at the end of the movie, I went to him and I said, you know, I want to write a silent movie for you. And
aww,
just do a silent movie together. I was like, oh, that's a great idea. I mean, the sweetest guy on earth. And with Bill, I mean, what can I say with Bill? It was, I mean, I'm exaggerating again, but it was really a love story. And the reason being that, you know, I get this job without reading the script. I'm reading the script, and it was a brilliant idea, brilliant concept, but some things were a little bit off. And the whole romantic side, which now is very, very important in the film, was hardly there. So when I talked to Bill the first time on the phone, he was not in LA at that time, and I realized that, you know, he really liked the idea and the character, but he thought that it needed a rewrite, which I had the same thing. So Bill, you know, I obviously have an accent. So when he heard my accent, you know, he was like a little bit reluctant. And I can understand that. This happens to me very often, where he says, well, can this guy really write a good American script, especially comedy? So I said, Bill, I said, listen, let's do one thing. Give me 1 week. Give me a try for a first rewrite. And then if you don't like it, we're going to hire some, you know, a comedy writer. And that's fine. I'm not getting offended. And he really liked that kind of, you know, to be open like this. So I rewrote, and I don't want to, you know, I'm not saying this to take out any, you know, good things that that the original writers did, but I rewrote the script, and then I met with Bill for the first time. He loved the first draft, and he was such, I can say that Bill and I, we really rewrote the script. I mean, Bill didn't physically wrote it, but he was such an attentive editor that every single thing he would say really made sense. And I put it on paper and then came back to him. So for a month before we started shooting, we were going back and forth with different drafts, I mean, up to the comma. And that really created a good understanding between us, which I think should be done for every single film, but not always you have that opportunity. And so by the time we were on set, there was absolutely no misunderstanding between us, no hesitation, you know, nothing. It was just like crystal clear how the character should be done. And I'm so pleased. When I watched that film, I mean, I try to forget that I'm the director, because Bill's acting in this film, it's so good that I almost forgot that he could be so good. I mean, I always liked him. That's not the point. But here, it's like so nuanced. The nuances are so good. And I'm going, oh, my God. This is fantastic. So, and you know, this goes back to the fact that when you work with actors with that experience, you know, they know. You don't need to back and try to explain them the role for days and days. They get it.
Yeah.
You need three words and they get it. Actually, and rightfully so, they get annoyed if you take too long to explain them the character.
Right, yeah.
You know, so it was a blessing, that film, and I hope it's going to do extremely well, because the film is very commercial but done with a lot of heart. So that was great.
Oh, well, I always like to hear when people have good experiences, and that's another one I'm going to want to watch, because it sounds like it would be a lovely movie, like you say, with heart.
Yeah, it is a lovely movie. That's what it is, you know, because it's slightly, and not because of the age of the actors, but it's slightly old-fashioned. It goes back to, you know, because I feel a very pretentious when I say that, but it goes back to the Nancy Meyers comedy, to this kind of, you know, it's complicated, or those kind of heartfelt romantic comedies.
Well, we've got something like 2.5 minutes. Usually at this time, I like to ask my guests to tell people the best way that they can be reached if somebody wants to get a hold of you for whatever reason.
Well, Facebook, for sure. I mean, I have a page of my name, so it's very easy to connect. That will be the easier way to, you know, Facebook and Messenger, and they write me, and I always answer. It's always a pleasure, you know.
Okay.
Always have a respect for the people that appreciate your work, and or they ask for advice. I mean, it goes back to the fact that at the end of the day, I'm a film lover who is lucky enough to do films, so. If I can help someone else, that will be great.
Yeah, and those are the kind of filmmakers that make the best kind. And since you had talked about it for just a minute, there is like a minute and a half left. So I want to mention to the listeners, whatever ones we have, that you have 98 various credits on IMDb, which is actually a pretty big deal. Because you had mentioned your, you know, how big your resume was, and that's a pretty big deal. 98 different credits on there, so that's kind of amazing. So now that we're down to that, I'm sorry. What?
No, it's funny because I never realized that. I mean, honestly, I'm not trying to be, you know, but I never realized there were that many. But because I'm always looking for the next one, so I'm always projected
right
towards the next project, you know.
Well, we're down to like the last 30 seconds or so. So usually I just ask the guest, is there anything that you want to say in closing?
No, and well, except that going back to Senior Moment, not only, I mean, of course, I want to underline how good Jean Smart was. She was absolutely fantastic. But the great thing about that film, it's also that we had a really, really good casting director, Pat McCorkle, who is in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And she helped me so much with this film, because I had the best cast I could ever imagine. Not because I had that many A names, but just because they were, every single one was absolutely excellent in that film.
Aw. Well, that's good. I'm glad it worked out that way. And I do have to close out the show pretty soon because they usually don't let you go very far before they cut you off, even if you're in the middle of talking. So, Giorgio Serafini, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate it. And I wish you much success in the future. And stay safe and have a good evening.
Stay safe and thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. And I had... it was very pleasurable for me as well to speak with you. So good night and goodbye.
Okay, good night and good luck.
Thank you, you too. Bye.
Okay, bye.